So today I want to speak about something that a friend of mine asked me to talk about. In fact, we engaged in a very hot debate about it. I like debating. Not just arguing, but just exchanging ideas, having a conversation about something which has division in opinion. So, before I continue with that, I want to mention something. I'm an economist. I did economics. I'm a graduate of economics, though I'm still learning a lot of things about economics. But I did economics because I wanted to understand how the world works. I believed from the onset, and I still believe that if you want to understand everything about how the world works, then you have to do economics and, add a little bit of history on top of it. I wanted to understand how these issues, these global issues that happens, for example, like wars, poverty, underdevelopment, geopolitics, all these things, I wanted to understand them. I'm mentioning this because what I wanted to speak about is related to economics and also is related to politics in a way. I'm not a politician, though I always like following politics because politicians just are, they just they actually control everything that we do. So I like to follow politics, though I'm not a politician. And yeah, I'm an economist. So those two. One of the key ambition plans, or one of the key ambitious plans that Ruto has, we've heard him talking about it several times, that he wants to make Kenya the Singapore of Africa. He wants to turn this country, he wants to transform this country to look like Singapore, which I think that's a very, very ambitious plan that every leader should actually dream of, especially if you're a leader of the global South or leader of African, any African country. You need to have ambition to be able to make your county, your country, have such enormous economic prosperity, like what we're seeing in Singapore. But then I ask myself, why Singapore? And everybody will ask themselves, why Singapore? Why not make Kenya the United States of Africa, or the England of Africa, or Australia of Africa, or China of Africa? Why particularly Singapore of Africa? And you see, the truth is that Singapore and the Asian tigers, majorly four of them, Singapore, South Korea, Hong Kong, Taiwan, all these countries, I can call them as edgemates of Kenya or edgemates of most African countries, but in particular Kenya. Why? Because you find that these countries, they got their independence almost at the same time Kenya got their independence, its independence. So Kenya got independence in 1963. Singapore got its independence in 1965 from Malaysia. The reason why I'm mentioning that is that it's very confusing to see Singapore has grown into such economic powerhouse of Asia, and yet Kenya, the Kenya, which is East African economic powerhouse, has not made such strides, as still has a long way to go when it comes to economic transformation and economic development. When you compare Singapore's economic development and Kenya's economic development, it's like day and night. Right? So you ask yourself why, and yet we were all colonized, by the same people, and we were freed almost at the same time, and still we're still behind when it comes to economic growth and economic development. One of the obvious annoying excuses that I hear mostly African countries or African leaders talk about, the reason why we are not developed, the reason why we still lag behind, is on the issue that we were colonized, our resources were plundered, we are oppressed, and we are still being oppressed, we are still being colonized. that is a sad story. Yes, of course it happened. We were colonized. And somehow, in some way or the other, we are still controlled in a way. We are still imperialized. Yes, that's true. Resources are taken away. Development are being done by foreigners. Like when I say being done, we give them contracts to undertake undertake works or to undertake implementation of projects, flagship projects in this country. We pay them. They don't develop it for them. We actually pay them to develop those things for us. Now you ask yourself, hey, is this a good claim that we were colonized and we're still being colonized and that is why we still lag behind? I think that's not true. That shouldn't be the case because you see, look, when you assess the world, there are few countries in the world which are not being controlled as of now, which are not being influenced as of now. Imperialism, neocolonialism exists to everybody in the world. Few of them that doesn't, you know, is not in that particular hook. Few of them countable. China, maybe. China is, of course, is the second largest country in the world. Second largest economy in the world. It has, you know, it's a country which has the highest number of people in the world, 1.4 billion. And they've made tremendous economic progress. They've been able to, you know, lift up more than 600 million people out of poverty in a period of 20 years. And it's becoming the center for global economy day by day. It has grown to unimaginable levels. And of course, they want to unseat the United States dominance economically, but in particular of the world. So you see, we can say China, or maybe Russia with its nuclear weapons and its bravery and their strongman Putin. Yes. But majority of the countries, almost 176 of them, they're still being influenced. For example, see Singapore. Singapore, it's largely Western. Their culture, their behaviors, their social interactions, everything has gone Western. What does that mean? It means that there's been such a huge influence of the United States and the Western culture into Singapore, meaning that they have not been that free, but still they've been able to, you know, provide economic liberty and political freedom to their people and this prosperity there. Go to South Korea, same, largely liberal, strategic ally to the United States in that particular region to neutralize DPRK's influence. That just shows you how the United States has wielded huge influence in that particular country. Same to Taiwan. A hot point of, you know, a global greatest powers clash there. They've been clashing there over time. They've never been free. Those countries, especially the United States and China, fighting over Taiwan just shows you how this country has never been free up to now. But regardless, they've delivered economic development and economic liberty to their people. What does that tell you? Then it tells you that us personally, I think that we're just not serious. We just cast blames to people. We just complain, den of complaints, epicenter of complaint of global problems. I think, what is wrong with us, by the way? Why can't we just, you know, have that political willingness and just ability to make brave decisions to be able to, you know, deliver economic prosperity to our countries, especially in Africa, especially Kenya? Can we become Singapore? That is, of course, possible. But given the context of Kenya, is it really possible with the kind of leadership that we have, with the kind of misplaced priorities that we have, with the kind of burdens that we have? Debt burden. Right now, I was shocked. And every time I mention this, I just feel like I'm annoyed. That 83% of the money that government collects from taxpayers goes to repayment of debt, mostly external debt. And yet government remains with 17% to now do its planning. whether it's development plan, where we're planning, whether it's now revenue, where we're in the current expenditure. You see, 17% is such meager for you to plan for development with. That is why I'm always worried that in 2030 we're still not going to be able to achieve the vision 2030 and even the medium term four plan of vision 2030. We're not going to be able to deliver them. I think Singapore has done great economic strides and they've been able to improve the lives of their people. They've been able to provide liberation when it comes to, and even like, just good social living compared to us. And I think if any country will want to be like them, then I think that's a good thing. You know, and I always tell myself, by the way, we don't have to be the geniuses of the world. We don't have to be Elon Musk of the world to be able to make our country great, make our economy great. Why? Because we already have countries that were like us before, you know, that we can be able to go and learn and ask them questions. How did you do this? I always ask myself, by the way, these benchmarking trips that our leaders always make, especially our MCS governors and MPs, there's that money that is allocated for them to go for benchmarking trips, for them to be able to go learn, ask questions there, just go see what those other countries are doing that we can do to make ourselves great. I've never seen any impact of such things. But what if we will just reemphasize on that we practically go there, materially come up with feedback, or not feedback, but observations, and translate these observations into policies, and then we worship those policies. You see, the reason why China is at the level it is right now is that those guys idolized policies. They believe that policies can actually work, can actually deliver them whatever they want. Here in Kenya, I don't know what we follow. I don't know what we do. I don't know what plan that we follow. Of course, I'm a great Kenyan, and I like Kenya, and I love Kenya. I love the flag. That's why I'm whining. That's why I'm whining. That why is it that we can't make our country great? Don't misunderstand me and start saying that, you know, I don't love my country. No, I love my country. And that's why I want my country to be great. I always want my country to become like, you know, the United States of Africa or the England of Africa. It can be, by the way. The question is, can we be able to? What can we do? We should stop to say that we are inferior. I think this is what has been... Every time we go to international conference, in United Nations, IGAD, whatever, AU, the statements from African leaders, and even us, we can't blame it. And even us, by the way, we always blame Wazungus. Those white folks that, you know, Wazungus, they still control us, they still create divisions, but who do they use? Who do they use? They use us, they use our leaders to do that. And I think this is what they mastered from us. They knew that when they find that when they pocket our leaders, then it's over. And historically, this was true even during the times of slavery. The white folks never used to walk into our villages, no. They sent your chiefs, the chiefs, you know, to go find those guys who are, you know, eligible or strong enough to go work overseas. That shows you how unwilling historically, or how perhaps we've been as Africans, we've been the creators of our own misfortunes. But I think that with change of thought, with change of mentality, with increased level of willingness, and, you know, increased ability to be able to make brave decisions, can actually make wonders to this country. Tell me what you think. I hope, you know, tell me what you think down there. What do you think we can do? What do you think? Do you think it's possible that we can become the Singapore of Africa? And what does it take to do that? Thank you so much. See you in the next episode.